Welcome to Mumfessions, the podcast that will normalise all of the challenges we experience as mums. I'm Laura Guckian, life coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. This podcast is unlike any other motherhood podcast because you will be my guests. Each week, I will invite you to share your mumfession. A mumfession is a challenge or experience that you are too afraid to share. The stuff that makes you feel like you are doing this whole motherhood thing wrong. I am going to help you recognize you are not the only one. You are not doing anything wrong. And most importantly, I will give you the tools you need to be a happier mum. And guess what? This season, I've invited some special guests to help me answer your mumfessions. Because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Coming up this week.
If you're a parent who thinks, I get it right, more or less, like about half the time, you're doing amazing.
And I think as parents, we have no rule book. And I've often heard myself saying, I wish I was a child psychologist. I wish I was.
I'm just going to say, Laura, that being a psychologist and a mother, it doesn't help me. Harm comes when it's chronic, which means constant. So it's 80% of the time you're yelling at your child, you're neglecting your child, you're, you know, saying things that are unhelpful to your child. Breastfeeding isn't the bonding thing. The bonding thing is the relationship you have with a baby.
Make sure you listen until the end, where I'll be sharing my weekly tip and challenge to help make things easier for you. Before we begin, I'd like to ask you to do something for me. Please hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you are listening. I am so excited to welcome my next guest on Mumfessions. I was just saying to her, I have a soft spot for every single psychologist. I adore psychologists. I love the work they do. So today I'm so excited to welcome mum, clinical psychologist, best-selling author, host of the Talking Sense podcast, Dr. Marta De Ros Collado. You are so very welcome to Mumfession. So you are joining us today to share your Mumfession and help me answer an audience Mumfession. But before we get into all of that, I would really love to know, why did you get into psychology? What was the moment where you were like, I want to support people through psychology?
I had a funny route into psychology, I think, in some ways, because what I wanted to be was a medical doctor in pediatrics. Okay. But what happened was, to do medical training, you have to do surgery, and I'm not good with the cutting up of bodies. It's not really
for
me.
I hear you.
And so I had a bit of a like crisis when I was a teenager. I was still at school, obviously, applying to things. And I was like, all I ever wanted to be was a medical doctor. So what am I going to do now? And it was one of my English teachers who said to me, why do you want to be a medical doctor when you think and speak like a psychologist? I'd never heard about psychology.
Wow. We didn't do it at my school. She saw it in you.
He. And he's really special to me because I think he really, I believe that teachers are incredibly powerful and I think they can be incredible role models for children. He gave me a lot of confidence about my voice. I used to be labeled as incredibly shy, believe it or not. I would have never, like if you'd spoken to me when I was 14 and said, you'll be doing this, I would have said, no. That's not me. Yeah. That would never happen.
It's not. We have just been having the most loveliest chats before we came on here. You're such a bubbly person.
Yeah, no. I was totally like frozen in my body. I was honestly, I think I was frozen in my body and I was really scared of speaking up. I was really scared of being heard and having my voice heard. And this English teacher used to make us all stand up and like talk about books, you know, like a little mini book review.
Yeah.
And we could choose any book we wanted. And I used to do it like looking down, like whispering. And he was the one who said to me, I'll never forget it. He said to me, what you have to say is important and people need to hear it. Wow. So look up because nobody is humiliating you or laughing at you. They're all trying to hear you. And I was like, what? And he told me that and I tested it out and realized that people were just paying attention rather than, you know, that kind of fear you have if I'm going to get mocked or I'm saying the wrong thing.
And what a lovely shift in perspective that people want to hear you, because sometimes we can tell ourselves, no, nobody wants to hear. And I think in our careers where we're on social media, I don't know if you can relate to this, but I sometimes have to step outside of that and imagine it's not me. Because if I actually think about that's me talking and people are listening, I will never, ever go there. But that's such a lovely way to flip it in. What about if people want to hear what you're saying?
Exactly. What if, right?
Yeah.
And then he said to me, the way you talk about books when I I was a kid, but you know, I'd read a book and I'd talk about it in class. He was like, you think like a psychologist. So I looked into it and then did loads of research pre proper internet. You know, when it was like,
yeah,
was
back so in the day, hard. The dial up. Yeah.
I know teenagers won't understand this, but it was so hard.
It like, took an hour.
Oh my God. And when I found out about it, I was like, oh, maybe I am interested. Yeah. You know, they talked about the brain. I was really interested in the brain. I was really interested in behavior, really interested in like relationships.
Yeah.
So I went to university and I absolutely loved it, which is probably like, I don't know.
Were you
I
academic not- in school? Did you like school?
Yeah. I love school.
Yeah. Well, that's probably why you're a psychologist, because it takes brains.
But I don't think I just kind of did it and thought, well, if might as well try. I also learned when I did a bit of research and then in my undergraduate that obviously you can work in a hospital, which is the career I built.
Yeah.
Is I worked in pediatrics my whole career in the NHS. Wow. So I worked alongside pediatric doctors, which is what I always dreamed to be. And I always think of my English teacher because I'm like, he was right. That's not the job I want. This is the job I want.
So did you know you wanted to support children? You just didn't know it was from the point of view being a psychologist, not a medical doctor.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I've always loved kids. Yeah. Like,
And that is the work you do now as a psychologist. It's mainly with children, isn't
children
it?
Children and their parents, which I absolutely love. It's like, it's something that I'm really passionate about. Yeah. And I do have that belief, which probably came from growing up with my parents and seeing my dad's work. I feel like my dad got consumed by work, but I'm not sure he ever loved it.
Yeah.
It was more of a, I have to work, you know, to provide for my family.
Yeah.
And I grew up always thinking, I don't want to be like that. If I work, I want to do something I care about.
Yeah.
And it's not like if you work in the NHS, it's not about the money. It's definitely because you care about something greater.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I love working with children and families. Like I love it, which is why I carry on doing it, if that makes sense.
And that's really clear from all of your content. And that's why I brought you on today, because I think as mothers, well, certainly my greatest fear, and we'll be getting into all of this later, is how do I raise a happy, resilient child? And I think my biggest fear, and maybe it's because I had my own mental health struggles, it's not necessarily that something physically will happen them. I'm like, how do I support them to be happy? And I think as parents, we have no rule book. And I've often heard myself saying, I wish I was a child psychologist. I wish I was. And I just think it's the greatest support we can have as mothers to reduce that guilt and know that we're probably doing it okay, which is, I hope, what we'll get from today's episode, because you're such an expert in this area.
Such a big hope. I'm just going to say, Laura, that being a psychologist and a mother, it doesn't help me.
Oh, I hear that a lot,
I know. That's the dream, right? That like, I've got this big toolkit, like rucksack. I like carry it with me. It's with me all the time. And I do think I probably have more tools than most. But when I'm a mum, which I am, to two daughters, I'm just a mum.
Yeah.
And I think it's a blessing and a curse, because I think people think, oh, well, you must find it so easy to mother your kids, which can come with less support, which can come with people thinking about you less, because they're like, you're fine.
Yeah.
You're doing fine. You're a psychologist. You'll be fine. And I just want to say, like, that's not true. It's just as hard. And it can be just as lonely. I know we were talking about motherhood and loneliness before. And I have more tools, but applying them can be just as difficult for me as for anybody else. And it's so much easier when I'm talking to somebody else. You know, taking that outsider point of view is always easy, because you're not flooded with your own emotions, with your past, with your guilt, your worries, all of that. That's gone, right? I can just be neutral and I can see objectively the things that I can't see for myself.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you this, this is something I do, and I don't know if it'll help anybody else, but it's something I do, and I'll tell my husband I'm doing it, which is I'll sit down when I'm really stuck in a rut with my child, often my eldest, because she's the most challenging one at the moment. I will sit with a notepad and I will imagine that she's not my daughter.
Wow.
And I will write down, what would I say to another mum if she told me this was happening? And it allows me to have an outsider perspective. And then I often can reframe what's happening to me and her in that moment, like in the rut. And it's often allowed us to change how we respond to her, or to change how I'm behaving or what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But if I get, that's when I get really stuck. I'm like, wait. What would I say to somebody else? Like, this is my daughter. This is her age. Yeah. This is what's happening. It allows me to take that position.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I just feel stuck like everybody else.
I love that you've shared that, because I think that is the challenge that we experience as mums, that even as someone like yourself, who is an exceptional clinical psychologist that knows the theory and knows the why, as mums, it's all emotional. Yeah. And it's because we care so deeply. Yeah. And sometimes that blocks us from thinking logically and being kinder to ourselves.
Yes.
And picking a course of action. And the fact that you struggle with that gives me a bit of comfort, because I'm like, well, if she doesn't know what she's doing with it, how am I supposed to know? I'm not a psychologist. And that's a really, really good piece of advice. What would you say to someone else's child?
Yes.
Take the emotion out, slip into the logic, which is so hard to do. And just look at it from the outside. Because when we're in it, we can't see.
And I think it helps me, and it will help others if you try it and it works. It helps you develop a bit of self-compassion as well, because it's so easy to berate yourself and be like, what am I doing wrong? Why am I failing them? Or like, I'm such a monster, I yelled, or whatever it is. When you think about, imagine your best friend came to you and said, this is what's happening with my child. This is how I'm acting. I'm a monster. You wouldn't be like, yeah, you are.
You're actually a terrible mother. You're correct.
You are terrible. Finally, you figured it out. Yeah. Like, who wants to be your child?
Yeah.
But you don't do that. You start to think completely differently. Like, oh, you're working really hard. Oh, your child is struggling. Something's like, clearly something is stuck.
Yeah.
You know, what can you do different? Yeah. What could you ask your child? What could you know? You know, you just think about it differently, but you also give yourself that self-compassion about you're doing your best. Oh, actually, you're really tired. You
we're so hard on ourselves.
So hard.
So, so hard on ourselves. And we're incredible.
Yeah, we do an incredible job.
We're amazing. Which leads me to the big question for today. Can you please tell me your mumfession?
So my mumfession is that although I'm a clinical psychologist and I've worked with children and families for over 20 years, seen like thousands of families, I still struggle being a mum. So I've got this big toolkit of resources, loads of strategies. I understand child development, all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't change the fact that being a mother to my kids is really hard.
I take so much comfort in that. I genuinely do, because I think as mums, we are so hard on ourselves. We expect that we are the experts in mothering. Yeah. We expect that we should know it all. We should know what to do. And the reality is none of us know. And even someone like yourself, who with a professional background knows how to do it with other children, you can still find it hard. I think that has given me so much comfort. And why do you think, and it's probably an obvious question, but why do you think it is harder for you to apply that to your own children and how you mother?
So for me, I feel like when I'm a mum, like the toolkit just, I might be carrying it like in an invisible rucksack, but I don't dig into it because I get flooded with emotion. I get flooded with stories from my past, from my childhood, from, you know, stories from the mum I want to be or the child I expect to have or whatever it is in that moment, guilt, anger, whatever. And so when I get flooded in that way, it's really hard to use the resources that you might have or you might know.
Yeah.
You're just in the moment with your child. I also think the one thing that reassures me as a clinical psychologist, which hopefully is reassuring for everyone, is that we're not supposed to parent perfectly. There is a lot of science on this. And actually,
can you just say that again? We are not.
Yeah. We are not supposed to parent perfectly. In fact, you know, to parent a child well and develop resilience in a child's brain and help them develop like healthy emotions, we need to parent well between 30 and 50% of the time. So if you're a parent who thinks, I get it right more or less like about half the time, you're doing amazing. You're doing amazing.
This is gold. Why don't they tell us this when we're pregnant? Because the pressure to be that mother is huge. So you're saying if we parent well, 30 to 50%, 50% of the time.
We're doing great. Like you're doing stellar. And most people that I know are not doing 50%. They're doing 80, 90%. And I often get parents, particularly in my Instagram community or who have read my book or, you know, and they'll ask me a question like, this happened, is it okay? And I'm like, it's okay. Like the fact you're thinking about it, I always say this to parents, if you're thinking about something you did, like I yelled at my child, have I harmed them irreparably? I'm like, you're thinking about that. That tells me there's no chance that you're harming your child.
Yeah.
Honestly, harm comes when it's chronic, which means constant. So it's 80% of the time you're yelling at your child, you're neglecting your child, you're, you know, saying things that are unhelpful to your child. And that's the majority of the time. That's when harm gets done. 50% of the time, you're doing great. Because the important bit, and we know this from science, is repair. So when we mess up, when we trip up, we make mistakes, we're also teaching our children to be human, which I think is really important.
Part of resilience, isn't it? That sometimes things will happen that are hard or you don't like.
Absolutely.
And this is how you overcome them.
Like, absolutely.
As you're talking there, I don't think, and again, I'm not a psychologist, I don't think it would be healthy to have a household that is constantly, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Everything's fine.
Really,
I've never been the shouty mom. We've never had a bad day. Because when they go into the real world, life is going to come at them.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, what's happening here?
Yes.
So in a way, if we reframe that as mothers and go, you know what? This is part of building their resilience. Yes. If I'm human and I'm having a bad day and I'm shouty mom, or I say something that I regret, or I do something, are we not just using that to build their resilience and prepare them for the real world?
And we can use that as an opportunity to kind of repair if we're yelling at them, right?
So how do we repair? Million dollar question, notes out. How do we repair if we are shouty mum?
Repairing is really important. So first, I always say this to mums, repair with yourself.
Yeah.
Because that guilt that you carry from the yelling or the shouting or saying the wrong thing is not healthy for you. And I don't think you can repair properly with your child unless you like give yourself a bit of that.
I love that you're saying that, because I always talk about being the best mother you can be starts with being the best person you can be to yourself.
Absolutely.
And being kind to yourself. And that is actually the most important relationship in your life.
Yes.
Everything else will stem from that. And if that inner critic is going, you're a terrible mother, you're the worst mother, like, that's not serving anyone.
No.
Because even if that were true, which is not true, you can't go into action when you're stuck in that place of that inner critic. You can't change anything. It does not serve a purpose.
No, absolutely. So I think if the repair comes from you, so it might sound like, yeah, I shouted. And, you know, often we'll be like, oh, I'm such a bad mom, or, oh, God, I've harmed my child. It's about reframing that. Oh, I'm such a bad mom. Not really. I shouted at my child and that action is not great. Like, that wasn't great. I probably scared them. It was a bit unfair. I vented out my anger. But I'm tired, or I'm depleted, or, oh, this has been going on for weeks and it's not, you know, whatever relationship.
Yeah. Or I don't know what I'm doing.
I don't know what I'm doing. I feel a bit lost. I'm lonely.
Yeah.
I'm figuring this out, you know, give yourself some grace.
Yeah.
And then be like, it's okay. I can do better next time. And then you repair with your child. So a proper repair with a child is an apology that is meaningful, which means you don't say, I'm sorry, but you know, you were shouting and I got like, it was so loud in this house and no one was listening to me. That's not an apology.
Yeah.
Because you're saying, if you weren't shouting at me, I wouldn't have shouted.
That's saying it's your fault.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's about owning your behavior, separate to your child.
Yeah.
Separate it. This is really hard. Some adults find this really hard. But I wouldn't behave this way if it wasn't for my child. That might be true. And you're only in control of your own behavior. Your emotions are yours to control. It is not your child's responsibility to not shout, to not make you angry.
Yeah.
No one makes us angry. We feel angry. And actually, if you put like, this is true, if you put like 100 people in one situation, you know, watching a film of a kid having a tantrum, for example, people have totally different experiences. Yeah. Some people get angry. Some people get really upset. Some people get scared. You know, like, so it's not true that child made you angry, because otherwise they'd make everyone in that room angry.
Yeah.
It's you. It's your experience of your child. So that's really important.
That's really interesting because... And again, it comes back to, again, we can't help how we feel. You know, it's a feeling. But actually, how you're feeling in yourself will determine your response to that big emotion from your child, as opposed to if my child doesn't do what I want or won't put on their clothes or whatever it might be, then that equals me getting angry.
Yes.
Because it might happen another day and you will have the capacity to laugh at it.
Absolutely.
And that is really true for if you're a mother struggling to give yourself permission to prioritize yourself.
Absolutely.
100%. This is why it's so essential, because we can't stop children having big emotions or tantrums or they will fight to the end for getting dressed in the morning. That's just what children do.
Absolutely.
But in an ideal world, our response would be easier. And I say easier because when we're angry, that's a hard emotion to carry. That takes energy.
Mm.
And I'm so proud of myself. I gave this example yesterday and I don't know if this is good or bad, but we do a lot of work. All my kids are autistic. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of work with my 8-year-old now on emotional regulation. And I was shouty mom last week. Lost it. I was like, for God's sake, will you just do this, Leo? And you have that rage. And I immediately kind of turned around to look at him, waiting for him to maybe be sad or run away or like, you know, that initial feeling where you're like, oh, he was laughing his head off. And he was like, oh, I think mommy has a big emotion. And I just thought, you know what, Laura, you've cracked it. You have cracked it. Because if your child can laugh at your big emotion and recognize mommy's having a big emotion, it's not me. It's not anything I've done. Mommy's just tired. Then I think I'm doing it okay.
You're doing great. I mean, credit to you that your child can even like recognize that. Oh, my mum is angry.
Yeah.
Something else.
Well, we've done a lot of work because
that's incredible.
Because as an autistic woman, even in my 30s, well, I'm still in my 30s, still almost, I struggled to name emotions. I couldn't say, am I angry? Am I sad? I didn't know the difference. So I'm not a perfect mother by any means. I've made massive mistakes, but I'm like, the one thing my children will know is how they're feeling. And that's one thing. And I work with psychologists and everyone.
I think that's huge because whether you're autistic or not, I think that what you've just shared is true of so many adults.
Yeah.
Not being able to recognize emotion or only being able to label like one or two emotions.
Yeah.
And then everything else feels like, I don't know what
I'm sad or I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I'm angry and I'm happy. Often it's...
Or you're angry, but you're actually sad.
Correct.
It goes so much deeper.
Or you're anxious. Like, I show a lot of anger when I'm scared. It's one of the times where I'll yell the most at my kids is that I've got fear. So I'm quite an anxious person.
Okay.
Which is something I've only recognized in my adulthood, maybe in the past like 7 years, I've really recognized, oh my God, it's anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, anxiety is really close to the surface. I mean, I shared that story before about being shy as a kid. Should have known that I was anxious. But you know what? Nobody ever
you
labeled
just
it
felt,
as that.
This feels scary. I don't want to raise my voice.
Yes. Yeah. But I, when I get scared about something my children are doing, I shout. And it's like an auto.
Yep.
Fear makes me angry. Like it becomes, you know, like an alert. You know, the fight, flight.
Yep. Yeah.
I am fighting in that moment, like so hard to like protect them. And it's my husband who's really helped me to go, you don't need to shout.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're scared right now, but they're safe. Or I know you're scared, but you can do something else.
Yeah.
And it's all those things that I will teach other people to do, but doing it to myself is much harder because my fear is actually really strong.
Yeah.
So my anxiety will rise really quickly. But yeah, anger is protective. And again, as mothers, we need to think of that. You know, when the tiger comes out in us.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's protective. Sometimes it's sad.
Yeah. It's like, not always a bad thing.
No. Well, and it's never bad.
It's never, there's no bad emotion. Is it fair to say that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's no bad emotion.
1,000%.
Yeah. We just need to tune into what they are. And I think what I'm hearing from you, that's why I love your mumfession, is there's no right or wrong way to do this whole motherhood thing.
No.
And actually, there's no perfect way to do it. But it's interesting you said there are a lot of the parents you see, instead of trying to do it well enough 30 to 50% of the time, they're doing it 80%. And my question, and I wonder, and we may not know the answer, is at what cost?
Yeah.
Like if you're striving to be that good mother, that perfect mother, which doesn't exist 80% of the time, then is that not actually disabling your ability to be the mother you want? Because it must be exhausting.
So I think that's a really great point, really great kind of reflection and thought. I think for me, there's various things, there's layers of it. I think our generation is one of the first mothers, dads, parents, where we are trying really hard to do something very different for our children than what was done to us.
Yep.
And one of the reasons for that is there is space for it.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think in our parents, there wasn't really, in our parents' generation, there wasn't space.
No.
There wasn't the information. There wasn't the kind of easy access to knowledge, like your podcast, like my book, like loads of resources out there now. And
that can sometimes be a bad thing.
It can, exactly. So I think there's a layer of parents now are actually striving to do something different, do something healing.
Yeah.
And the healing is not just for their children. I think it's also for them. So I think some of these parents who do the 80%, some of those parents are under pressure. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. If that's one of you, I want you to say, you know, shut down your social media. Stop reading all the parenting books. Mm. You're doing good enough. You know, just relax into your parenting relationship with your child. But some of those 80% will say, this is healing me. This is helping me. Wow. And to those parents, I would say, keep going. Just notice when it's too much. Because you got to notice when you're like, I'm pushing too hard and I just need, you know, I can just lean back. 80%, you can go down to 60%. You're doing great, like more than great. I think, but I know that there's lots of these parents because I, you know, I see them in my community, but also I see them in therapy and they're doing a great job, but they will say what I'm doing with my child is healing me. So it's part of my personal process that in my identity as a mother, I am healing this like inner daughter that I've got inside me, this little girl.
So much of that comes up in motherhood.
And so for some parents, they don't want to let go of that. Yeah. And I think we often talk about the pressure, but we dismiss the fact that some people are saying, no, I like this.
Yeah.
This is giving me something, something I'd never received. And now I'm receiving it when I read it and I can pass it on to my child and feel like something inside me is also healing. So it's a balance. And I think it's so unique. Like there is no right or wrong. You need to just really think about what works for you and your family and your child.
Yeah.
I would say if you're getting parenting burnout because you're trying so hard to be perfect, you need to pull back because perfection is something you can't achieve. Like, and you shouldn't achieve it.
It doesn't exist.
But also the science says if you're too good a parent, that's also not great for your kid. Oh,
we have just got permission from a psychologist to not be too good a parent.
100%. You that do have permission.
We have our permission slip.
Oh, you can't build resilience if you're never disappointing your child, if you're never missing their cries and not attuning to them all the time. It's in the mismatch that, you know, the synapses join in our brain and like resilience and attachment happens.
Wow.
So allow that to be messy. Allow it to be messy. That's why often I will say to parents, it's okay for your kid to cry. And they're like, they're crying. I'm like, you don't have to fix it. Tears are not bad.
Yeah. There's no bad emotion.
And, you know, often people ask in the car is such a good example. My child is crying in the car. I can't do anything about it. Yeah. I'm driving. That's is that really not hard. The same as crying it out? No, it's not. Because you're in the car, you're often talking to you. It's okay. We're driving. We're singing. I'm always playing on the radio, you know, singing really loud. The wheels on the bus.
God, it's hard.
But they're crying. My baby's screaming her head off. I can't stop right now. Like, I know that stopping in, it's not feasible. It's okay. I know no harm is happening to her. It's still a stressor in our bodies. To hear a baby scream is a stressor. That's a biological phenomenon. It's supposed to be stressful.
And is it true that as women, we are biologically programmed to react to that cry differently to men?
No.
Is that a myth?
It's a myth.
It's a myth. Wow. So there's no excuse.
No, absolutely not.
That's a myth. Wow.
It's a myth.
I've learned something new. I thought we were biologically.
Men
have something to answer for. So why are they not getting up? Why are they not reacting the same?
Because
so
we do.
We do it so they don't do.
Yeah, no, this is true.
So we are not programmed to react to a cry.
Absolutely not. There's been a huge amount of science around biologically priming, the nurturing, you know, this mothering
sense. So is that a social thing?
It is a social thing. We have socially learnt about it. And if I'm honest, it's something that as parents, we need to be mindful of. We have spent a lot of time thinking about little girls and their freedom of expression and their, you know, you can be whoever you want to be, but we're not thinking about little boys. And I do think this is important.
Wow.
We do teach little boys not to cry. We teach them to be the strong ones.
Be brave.
Be brave. We teach them not to play with dolls. We teach, you know, playing with dolls is role play. What is role play? It's practicing. It's practicing what real life looks like in a child's mind, right? That's why they role play cooking. They're not cooking in a kitchen.
Yeah.
But they're role playing the things that they see adults do. Little boys see their mums nurturing them. Why wouldn't they play with a little doll and nurture them? And lots of people will say, but they want to play with cars. Well, we've socialized them to play with cars. Because my little girl loves a car. And she's like, vroom, vroom. She loves it. She'll like throw it to me, you know, roll it to me, etc. But we haven't socialized boys to do that. And I would go further to say lots of adult men don't role model those nurturing values. They don't role model softness, crying, gentleness, picking up their sons and being the one who, you know, rocks them in their arms when they get hurt rather than, come on, you're fine, stand up. It's a socialization. And we know this because there's tons of science around it. We're not primed to be nurturers more than men. We have the same capacity for empathy and nurturing. Yes, biologically, we are often the feeders because of, you know, the hormones that we get when we give birth around, you know, oxytocin, yeah, et cetera, are different. So we know that when a baby's born, the mother will get more of, like, yes, the biological hormonal, yeah, stuff. And that's because we're supposed to be the main, kind of their main person for a, yeah, little bit. It's biological, right? In nature, you see it as well, yeah, right? But actually in humans, it's not true that it is just the mum.
Why after have we a been while, fed this lie? Because that has been, and I know. Hands up, I have been guilty of saying that. I thought we were biologically programmed to react.
We're not.
We're socially programmed.
Yes.
I'm angry.
But that I'm is angry. Why there are so many amazing dads who are incredibly nurturing or, you know, yeah, same-sex families.
Yeah.
Like I often had previously, not so much anymore, but previously there was a lot of conversation about, do you think that two men can look after a baby? I'm like, yes.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? It's called love.
It's such, yeah.
If you love a child, why couldn't you care for them just as well as me? Like, yeah, why not? Children don't need to be breastfed to develop attachment or bonding to a parent.
Love that you said that.
It's not
too
true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true if you're a woman, it's true if, yeah, you're of a different gender. It doesn't matter. Breastfeeding isn't the bonding thing. The bonding thing is the relationship you have with a baby.
That has just reduced all the guilt that so many mothers feel because they couldn't or chose not to breastfeed.
I mean, it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't see breastfeeding, you know, there'll be some midwives who probably won't like what I'll say, but I'm going to try and make it nuanced.
The way that's that okay. This is the podcast to say it in.
The way I think about breastfeeding is it's a choice, but it's not always something that is given to you. Some women really struggle to breastfeed. Mm-hmm. And I have seen it both within my friendship groups, like personally, and within my work. If your mental health is affected by breastfeeding, please look after yourself, yep, first. Your baby just needs to be fed.
Yep.
This is a fact. It's not going to harm your baby.
Yep.
It's not going to harm your baby. Yes, we know breastfeeding has lots of positives in terms of, you know, nutrition, etc., and also like the closeness. But you can have closeness with your baby, yep, without
it's only the best breast if it's best for you.
Exactly.
And I made that decision when I had my second and third baby to not breastfeed because I was like, my mental health is the only thing that matters here.
Absolutely.
I'm not going there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like what, you know, I'm not into the narrative of pushing breastfeeding on mums. I'm into the narrative of like letting them choose, but also choosing themselves is a really important choice because babies are really hard to look after. Like,
yeah.
It's not an easy ride.
Yeah.
And so if it's going to make it easier for you to use a bottle, to have somebody support you with the bottle,
yeah,
to not feel like whatever it is, the stress, yeah, of breastfeeding, just drop it.
It's so interesting. And we're going to move on to an audience confession now. But I think in most of the episodes we've recorded in this season, breastfeeding has come up.
That's really interesting.
It came up. I actually think it's come up in nearly every episode. The feelings around how we fed our baby. And to end kind of this part of the podcast on it, I think, and I'd be interesting to hear your take, is it because as mums, that's the first time, whether you're breastfeeding your baby or formula feeding, that we maybe feel like, wait a minute, I'm not getting the support I need. Mm. I'm somehow feeling judged because mothers at both sides, I hate that there's both sides, are feeling judged.
Mm.
Is that the first time as mothers we're like, oh, wait, this is maybe not what I thought it would be. I'm maybe not getting the support I need. This is maybe harder than I thought. And so that emotion, it sticks with us.
You know, I think, yes, I really like what you just said. For me, I don't know if there's any science on this, but personally, as a mother who does breastfeed and, yeah, has a really complicated relationship with breastfeeding,
yeah,
I still breastfeed,
wow,
1-year-old, but it's complicated. I have a love-hate relationship with breastfeeding. I think we are brought up in a society with this narrative about mothering and mothers. And breastfeeding is one of the things that, you know, is kind of talked about as natural, isn't it?
Mm.
And I'm sorry, but there's nothing. Natural means it'll be easy.
Yeah.
To me, natural means it'll be easy. It'll feel instinctive. You'll just do it.
They'll crawl up on your breast.
Oh, yeah. That kind of idealized. They'll crawl up and they'll suckle and you're done.
It wasn't like that.
It's not like that. And it's not like that for most women. For some women, I think it is. And
amazing.
I think it's beautiful. Like there, I get quite emotive about it because I do think that is incredible. But let's be honest, that's not true for everybody. Yeah. So I think that narrative of the natural thing can make you feel really guilty when it doesn't feel natural, when it doesn't just happen. And it can also make, you know, the flip side of that is it might happen. And then you have this sense, me personally, of, you know, people look at you like you get the both sides. Yeah. You have people judge you. Like my daughter's one, and I know some people might judge because it's, why didn't you stop at 6 months? Why wouldn't you just free yourself? But two, also people don't understand why some people might, like me, do it. There's lots of reasons. Even if I don't love it, there's lots of reasons why I still breastfeed her. But also the other flip side is it should be natural, so I should enjoy it. Like it should be blissful.
Yeah.
And it's not. So I often feel
I can still feel the pain of trying to breastfeed my first.
Yeah.
Like, it was bad. It was probably sore than delivering him.
And I think also the other part of the breastfeeding kind of story narrative is there is no real support for women to breastfeed. Again, because we think it's natural, it's instinctive, it'll just happen. So where is the breastfeeding support, proper breastfeeding support, which for me should be about a properly qualified lactation nurse coming to see you when you give birth and reviewing you for weeks, checking, do they have a tongue tie? Yeah. How are you doing? Are you in pain?
It doesn't exist.
Pain is not normal, okay? Pain is common.
Yeah.
But it's not normal. You should not be in pain when you breastfeed your child. Yeah. This is a fact. If you're in pain, something's not working. Wow. And it could be the latch. It could be something else. I've paid for lactation consultants and I think they're worth, you know, they're worth gold. Like they're amazing. But we shouldn't, it should just be offered because we can't expect women to do something without giving them appropriate support. It just doesn't
I just had a light bulb moment, and to kind of finish it on this, I think what you said there is really key, that the narrative that exists around breastfeeding now, not always, but, you know, breast is best. It's easy. It's natural. But we're doing a disservice by not talking about how hard it can be.
Yes.
Because without that, we can't get the support we need. If a woman chooses to, if you choose not to, that's fine too. And I think it's the same for motherhood in general. Mm-hmm. This narrative of they're only young once, enjoy it, it's the best time.
Oh, I hate like, those stories.
We're doing a disservice. And I sometimes get this, oh, you're so negative, Laura. But no, I'm not. I'm giving it the space it needs because for some women it's incredibly hard. And until we're honest about it, we're not going to get the support we need to bridge that gap where we are in a position to enjoy every moment.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a really lovely way to end it, that there's so much power in the honesty of this is hard. Because without that, we can't get the support. We can't. Feed into that false narrative.
And also, it's okay not to love every moment.
But like, who loves every moment of anything?
Of anything in your life. Exactly. Maybe just accept like motherhood, breastfeeding, anything.
Life, it's hard. We were never supposed to do this whole motherhood thing alone. The village is gone and it's not coming back anytime soon. That is why I've created an online village just for you. Imagine this. You have 24/7 access to like-minded mums in a safe online space away from social media. And I'm there too. You get to access 2 monthly online meetups with me and other guest experts, all designed to help you navigate different chapters of motherhood. And you have access to the Mind Mommy Coaching Academy, your online vault of bite-sized classes and advice, all designed to help you be a happier on-camera mom. You don't have to do this alone anymore. Click the link in the podcast description and say yes to a happier on-camera way. Let me help you. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's not selfish to Mind Mommy. It's essential. I think that leads us to the next part, which is our audience mum fashion. Will you help me answer it?
Okay.
Okay, let's give this a go.
Since becoming a mother, I'm really struggling with my own relationship with my mother. I realise now that I was heavily criticised my whole life. Nothing was ever good enough, that I wouldn't have got the emotional support that maybe I needed. It's affected me now in adult life. I have very little confidence, very little self-esteem. I haven't spoken to anyone about this and definitely couldn't, my mother. I do want my kids to have a relationship with her because I feel like she should have a chance to be a grandmother. I suppose my main concern is that I don't want to make the same mistakes that my mother made. I want my children to grow up feeling confident and so certain of their worth and value in this world.
Makes me so sad because I think even if someone's listening to that and they can't relate to that example, that universal feeling, I'm actually getting upset. As a mother, we all want the same thing for our children.
Yes.
And we don't know how to do it. And so we turn it in ourselves. I'm so sad listening to that.
It's a really emotive question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. And that piece that kind of lends itself to what we were speaking about earlier, the role that our experience of our mothers plays on how we mother, the desire to do it right. And we're trying so hard.
Yes. And I think this mother and anyone who kind of resonates with this, a few things strike me. So firstly, her thoughtfulness, this idea of wanting her mum to have the opportunity to be a grandma. I mean, that's incredibly thoughtful and kind. And that just says so much about her as a person, but also in her mothering kind of journey, her mothering story, because that is kind of mothering her mum to think about her, to keep her in mind.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. And not everybody does that. So I just, if you're listening, I want you to hear that. And secondly, you know, how do I do this differently? You're already doing it differently. I mean, I don't even need to know what you're doing. Just that question tells me that you are mothering your children. We always say good enough, but I'm going to say good.
Yeah.
Because I've started to drop the word enough. You're doing really good as a parent. And I think you need to just build that inner confidence.
Yeah.
And, you know, what she's talking about, we've got kind of a story around it called the mother wound. So it's not a diagnosis. It's not like a criteria, but it is something that can help. Like, think about it. She's got a mother wound. Lots of women do. Lots of women in our generation have a mother wound.
And what is a mother wound?
So the way it's been framed is that you realize that you haven't been parented by your mother in a way that was nurturing enough.
Wow.
But it can look like, I mean, I can use big words, but it can look like neglect or emotional abuse.
Okay.
And like, you know, that constant criticism, that kind of feeling like you were never good enough, like you're always trying to be accepted by your mother, right? Even now in adulthood. And I can hear that in that question itself. There is a little twinge of that, like I want to be acceptable, you know. That can be part of the mother wound, but it can also just be feeling like your mum never saw you or understood you or like really cared about you enough. And it is something that lots of women carry, but boys and men can carry it too.
Yeah.
There's also such a thing as a father wound, which is slightly different, often about absence. But with the mother wound, I think, you know, it can be helpful to kind of think about it that way, that there's a wound inside you.
Wow.
Something's missing. And what I would say about that is you can... The mother wound doesn't have to be filled in by your mum. You can learn to give that to yourself. You don't need your mum anymore once you're an adult. You can give yourself that nurturing, that love, that compassion, that kindness.
Yeah.
You know, like I just said about that question, you know, reflect on the fact that the thoughtfulness you're putting towards your mother, can you give it back to yourself? She might not be so deserving of it.
Yeah.
If she's wounded you. But you might be needing to like hold that in. So one of the ways to work with the mother wound is about setting boundaries.
Yeah.
Because often what happens is those mums, those grandmas will still be hurting their child.
Yeah.
Whether it's often not on purpose. So I think that's important. But you can set strict boundaries around how you want to have a relationship with your mother. And you can start to stand up for yourself in a way that maybe your parent never did.
Yeah.
So by saying, you can't speak to me like that, or, you know, thinking about if they do X, Y, Z, maybe I need to have a longer break or see them less.
Yeah.
You know, not see them for a week at a time, like around Christmas.
Yeah. It's almost
maybe we
like,
just dip in and out.
Yeah. Recognizing out. You're not the child anymore. You're an adult and you get to define what that relationship with your mother looks like.
Yes.
But also having the compassion that just as mothers now, we don't really know what we're doing and we're doing our best. I think there's the piece of our mothers did their best.
Yes.
They did what they thought was best. And I think there's a bit of healing and letting go of I would have liked to have been mothered in a different way, but she did her best.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let that go now and I'm going to move forward and I'm going to try and be the mother I want to be, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
And redefine that relationship.
Yes.
But I almost found myself getting really emotional with this. And I don't know if you've noticed in this episode, I've kind of like had to hold back the tears. And I don't know why, but I think, and I spoke about this on a previous episode with Anna Williamson. It was a lovely episode. Oh my God, I love her. It's just this, 5% of like, did I damage my child? You know, did I do something wrong in those like early years? And oh God, I know I'm upset now, but I know so many mothers will relate to this, that the pressure we put on ourselves and there's this pressure of you can't mess up those early years. They're so important. And for so many mothers, they are struggling with their mental health or for whatever reason, they're emotionally absent. I think my question to you, and I know we've kind of gone off topic, but I just feel like I've connected with you and you're a good person.
That's very
How do we let that go? Like, I still hold that 5% where every now and then it just hits me like a train. It's like, you know, Jesus, Laura, like you were so unwell. You weren't there for him. And then the logical part kicks in where I'm like, but you shouted at him the other day and he said, oh, mommy's having a big emotion. Like you're actually doing it. But it's the rawness of the pressure of we need to do this right. We need to do it right. And if we don't do it right, then we've damaged them. And I just felt like I needed to share that with you because I still hold that 5%. I probably always will. And it's like my scar that's still there. It's not hurting me anymore. But for any other mother listening who's in that now, it's hard enough to struggle, whether you're struggling physically, mentally.
Yeah.
I just want them to let that go. I don't want them to feel how I felt. And here I am, 8 years later, still crying about it, having done the work, going, God, did I damage him? Did I do something wrong? Because it wasn't my fault. And I suppose you're an amazing psychologist. And I'm asking you to woman, mother to mother.
Yeah.
Did I damage him?
No, absolutely not. And I want you to see that scar not as a negative thing. Because actually, I think that's what makes you a really good mum.
Yeah.
That scar.
Look at me, we're on full-blown therapy here.
No, that scar is more like, how can we reframe it? Because I like that you've called it a scar and it's like something visible. But I think, you know, scars can be beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? Scars say, I've had an experience and it hurt. But look, it healed.
Yeah.
And something's left on you. How can it not? Like, to me, that makes sense that you carry it with you. You're going to carry it with you forever in your mothering journey with your little boy. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. So maybe rather than looking at it as I harmed my child, you can think about it as that's part of my relationship with my child. And that's what reminds me that I'm a really good mom because I went through that really hard bit. And look where I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think so many mothers go through this.
And that's why I just felt so compelled. I know I didn't mean to start wailing. But that's what happens on this podcast. We laugh, we cry. That is motherhood.
Absolutely.
That is motherhood.
It's real.
It's but real.
But you know, so like this mum and you know, mums around the world, I really want you to know that you are really good parents. And I don't believe in blaming our parents for the things they got wrong. I believe in trying to offer them understanding and compassion. Because like you said, they did their best with what they had.
Yeah.
Now we're doing our best with what we have, which is often a bit more than what they had.
Yeah.
So
and maybe that's not a good thing either because we're bombarded with this is how to do it.
Exactly. It's not black and white. Yeah. It's not like, so we're better. No, we're different.
Yeah.
Right? We're different. We know more, so we might do something different. But we're going to get it wrong too.
Yeah.
And I think part of this is about accepting that we're going to get it wrong and that's okay. But with this question and with you, one of the things that I would think about is how do we also put ourselves first? Mm. And I know we've talked about this a bit today, but I think nurturing ourselves is really important. We can't nurture our children if we don't give it to ourselves first.
Yeah.
So it's important to set boundaries with those people who might hurt you. And sometimes those people are your parents.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's okay to say, I'm going to put myself first now.
Yeah.
Maybe in childhood, I feel like I missed out. But now that I'm an adult and a parent,
I have control.
Correct. Yeah. I've got control over me. And actually, I have control over how I parent my child. I can also have control over the relationship my child builds with a grandparent.
Yeah.
And if I look at it and think that's not safe, or I don't like those words that grandparent is saying, or whatever it is, I can set a boundary.
Yeah.
And I can still do it respectfully. And I can still do it kindly. We don't have to be, you know, I talk with lots of parents about things like this. And I would say it actually relates to me because I set very strict boundaries around my grandparent relationships. They're really strict.
Yeah,
I am not okay with grandparents saying certain things to my children or doing certain things. Yeah. And I'll just set that boundary and be like, we're not staying over or whatever it is. We're not spending more than 3 days with grandparents because after a while, they kind of spiral into all the stuff that I don't like. 3 days is like maximum limit.
Yeah. And that's you being kind to yourself.
Absolutely. It also helps me because my stress level goes down.
Yeah.
So often in relationship with our parents, we become the child.
Yeah.
That's normal.
Yeah.
But when you become the child, you also can't support your child because you get lost in the kind of that relationship dynamic. Yeah. So it's important to stay the parent, stay in that adult side of you and be able to protect yourself and your child, which sometimes means spending less time and nurturing yourself more. Yeah. So giving yourself that compassion.
It's so helpful. And I think to kind of finish this whole podcast, which this episode has been phenomenal. We have got over time. I think we could talk about it all day. But I think the main thing I'm taking from it is, and it's what I talk about all the time with my clients, you know, God love one of my clients. She was on to me last week. She had a particularly hard day. And she's done so much work. And, you know, I was reminding her, this is just one day. It's not undoing all the work you've done. You've just had a bad day. And that is life. It goes up and down. But I think the main thing is, as mothers, it is absolutely essential that we put ourselves really high on that priority list, that we do what we need and want, that we ditch all the shoulds, that if we're worried about being a good mother, then the best thing you can do to be, quote unquote, a good mother, whatever that means to you, is to be really just good to yourself.
Yes.
Be the kindest you can be to yourself. And recognize that even if you're someone like me who had the most challenging year you could possibly have as a mother in my first year, that it's actually nurturing a gorgeous relationship with your child. That is your journey. That is your story.
And also maybe hold on to the fact that that is 1 year in your relationship with a child, which is going to be for a lifetime.
Yes.
Do not hold that 1 year as more important
than a year
than
when they're 25.
The other seven.
I love
that. Or the next 25 years of your life with your child. Because parenting is not for childhood, it's for life.
We are parents
forever.
Yeah.
So a year, 2 years, a day doesn't count in the mix. Correct.
I talk about it in chapters. And actually, if you found the earlier chapters hard, then maybe you're, and I say this all the time, your happier chapter is the teenage years or the adult. And we had the lovely Hilary Whitehall in yesterday. And that was really her concluding part as a mum and a grandmother now. She's like, motherhood is forever. So that pressure of 18 summers.
No,
they're only young
rubbish.
Once.
Rubbish.
Please
not
tell
true.
Me they're only young ones because I find this part really hard.
Exactly. For some people, that's a relief, right?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
But your relationship, like, evolves and changes and transforms. And I don't want parents to hold on to, like, you know, if they had mental health issues, that their mental health during a season of their parenting or a chapter of their parenting, as you call it, is the defining chapter.
No,
it's not. It's
part
like
of
a
the
book,
story
right?
that will probably
Correct.
Define the next chapter. And for me, that's probably the why where I'm like, right, we need to work with psychologists. My children will never feel how I feel. They might, but I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they never feel that. And that might not have happened had I not have had that experience.
But also your children, when they grow up, they're not going to remember that 1 year.
No.
Your son is not going to remember
that. No, he doesn't. He knows briefly about
the
it.
The bits he's going to remember about the relationship he has with you are going to be very different things.
Yeah.
They're going to be about things that he enjoyed doing with you, things that he remembers you and him doing. Like, think about yourself, like the nostalgic bit.
Yeah.
It's not about the like really hard bit, that 1 year, especially if it is like that. It's not about that. You know, it's a spectrum. It's so much bigger than just defined by one moment in your parenting.
And I actually think that's a beautiful place to end it, that our children are magical and they find a way to deal with it, whatever it is. And just thank you so much for coming on. I feel I could talk to you all day. And this honestly could be two episodes because you've shared so much wisdom. In terms of mothering our children and recognizing as mothers, we're doing it.
You are
doing a good job.
And you're doing so good. Just remember that.
What an absolutely incredible episode that was. I didn't expect to get as upset as I did speaking to her. And I knew this before we started recording. I just felt this warmth from her, this safe space. And I didn't expect to say that part at the end and cry and share my vulnerability of that piece that I still carry. And while I've done the work and while I've healed, every now and then there is just that fear of, am I doing enough? Have I done enough for my children? Have I done something to damage them? And I think regardless of what your experience is as a mum, I think we've all felt that. And so for this week's challenge, I really wanted to tap in to what she said about what we need to do to be the good mother. And you know my feelings around the good mother or the perfect mother. It doesn't really exist. But I think for me, that means doing the best we can. And I loved how she spoke about that to do that, we only need to do it 30 to 50% of the time. And I think that is huge because so many of us are striving to do it 100% of the time. And if we don't do that, then our inner critic lights up and we tell ourselves, we're not doing it right. You're not good enough. And it's just nonsense. And the sense of relief I have to hear a clinical psychologist with her experience of working with children telling me that is huge. So your challenge for this week is ask yourself, what level are you trying to be the good mom at? Are you at 30%? Are you at 60%? Are you at 100%? Are you trying to be that mother all of the time? Just ask yourself. I would probably say, if I'm being honest, I'm maybe the 60%. But what I'm going to do this week, and I invite you to do it as well, is I'm going to reduce that right down to 30%. I am going to give myself permission to just try and be the good mother 30% of the time this week. And I want you to do the same. And I want you to take note of how it feels. What are the changes you've experienced? Do you feel like your reserves are a bit higher? Do you feel like your inner critic is a bit lower? Do you have more energy? Do you feel like you are actually more present and mindful in the moment with your children? And I want you to let me know. Drop me a DM on my Instagram, Mind Mommy Coaching. Drop me an email. I want to know how you feel by dropping that good mother attempt from 100% or 80% down to 30%. Because, and I say it time and time again, the key to navigating this whole wild and wonderful world of motherhood is to put ourselves first where we can and be kind to ourselves, be compassionate with ourselves. And we have just got permission today, ladies, from a clinical psychologist who works with children telling us we don't have to do it 100% of the time. 30 to 50% is absolutely fine. So that is officially it. The end of another season of Mumfessions. And oh my goodness, what a season it was. I was a little bit nervous about season 3 because I was changing up the structure a little bit. But I am so glad that I invited these amazing other experts and inspiring mothers to join me to share their Mumfessions and to help me answer yours. Because it just reinforced what I've been speaking about all along, particularly in season 1 and 2. If you haven't listened to season 1 and 2, go back and listen. Or if it's been a while, go back and listen again, because you always take something else from it. It's just reinforcing we're never alone in what we're feeling. We actually all feel the same in motherhood, yet are afraid to share it. And I have had such a mix of guests this season, and it just reinforces that again. So thank you so much for listening. Please, please, please share this with a friend, because if you related to it, they will too. Make sure, and this is really important, that you hit follow or subscribe, because we will be back really soon with more Mumfessions. And I want you to be the very, very first to hear. And if you have time, I'd really, really appreciate if you found this season helpful to please, please, please leave me a review wherever you are listening. Remember to mind yourself as a mom. It's not selfish. It's essential. This was an Insanity Studios production. The production manager was Charlotte Mason. The podcast producer was Saffron Mirza. And the production assistant was Abby Sandler.